Welcome to Final Cuts here at VBS Film Production Studios. And today with me, in from LA, is Andrew Taylor. Andrew is visiting here in Cleveland for the week. There's a little bit of a writer's strike going on, and Andy's been in the movie business now as a key grip, dolly grip, all the grips union, for over how many years, Andrew?
Oh, 30 plus.
30 plus. So you've seen a few things behind the scenes, I would say.
Very much so.
Yeah, yeah.
Being from L.A.
True,
not
true.
Not a big fan, but yeah.
Yeah, but what I see is, your background is great, but we get a chance, really to see a little bit about sort of behind the scenes. We all watch movies.
True.
The world watches movies, but you get to watch the movies from the other side of the camera. Not necessarily behind the camera. That's somebody else's job,
right? Somebody else's job. But I do have a little monitor, so I see what he sees when I'm pushing dolly. So
there you go.
You see what they're seeing.
That's right. Well, just as a little background, too, just to give our audience a little hint of where you've been and what you've done. You started as an intern in Pittsburgh with...
Larry?
No, it wasn't Larry. It was, what's his name now? You started in Pittsburgh with Mr. Rogers.
Well, I did some work with Mr. Rogers, to be fair, but I wouldn't exactly say I worked. But we moved his sets around, like the trees and the trolley. We moved them around from stories to bring him on the set so Mr. Rogers could do his thing. They were filming at QED. But Larry Oswald, was it? We both worked?
Oh, well, we both worked with Larry Oswald, the director back then, to do some commercials, yes. And but from there, Monkey Shines with Russ Romero.
First movie, not to correct you, but I will. The first movie was Lady Beware with Diane Lane. And I was transportation co-captain because I had a truck that could pull the generator around. That's the only way I got the job. I show up for my interview with a tie, suit, briefcase, and the guy goes, what are you, putz or something? What are you, he's showing up here and everybody else is in t-shirts and jeans and flip-flops. But I got the job anyhow.
Well, I find that to be a fashion lifestyle you took on forever.
Yeah.
And just to kind of...
It was cute. Yeah. My job was to take the DP and his wife, who was the director, to and from the hotel. I picked him up in the morning, bring them the set, and then take him home. After 12 hours. And the first time I pick them up, they're in the back seat and they get out the mirror. And true in Hollywood style, they're both doing bunt lines.
Honey, here you go, honey.
All right, let's go to work.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and I look down the list here. This goes on I have 20 films here, but I'm not going to go through them all. But right now, I think we'll just kind of hit a few highlights. Go back and pick a couple of these because they've got some nice little stories with them. But, Monkey Shines. Russ Romero was the director and producer behind Day of the Dead, his original icon horror film. And then you run Monkey Shines, White Fang.
Yeah, that was...
Was that a Disney film? That was
Disney film. Yeah. Jack London's novel. Takes place in Alaska. That was probably the best location I've ever been on because we were there for almost 6 months.
Yes.
Through the whole... night, through the coming to the daylight, you go into a bar, you come out of a bar 11 o'clock and the birds are chirping and the lights coming up.
Plus they shipped the entire set.
Yeah.
And what is
it's still there.
It's still there.
As a tourist attraction.
Yeah. Yeah. To make it a gold rush town. And so you were hidden away in Alaska for a while. You even made a little small appearance in the film, did you not?
As a background during one of the dog fighting scenes. But they were really fighting people. They were just playing.
Of course, they were.
Yeah. Hollywood.
No animals were harmed in that.
They had to bring in snow one time. They had to go to Canada because we were running out of snow. And they had to ship truckloads of snow up so we could finish in March.
Oh, my God. Well, Striking Distance with Bruce Willis.
Oh, yeah. And,
a good film there. Heat, Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Val Kilmer.
Right before we did Heat? We did the classic Showgirls. So you're going from one
Showgirls.
Spectrum to the other. Worst raspberry movie ever to like one of the best.
Matter of fact, do you remember I happened to be in Vegas on a business trip?
Okay.
You were there, and we went with your location scout to a couple of, yes.
We were at the, what, the Stardust, I think we were filming?
Yeah, yeah.
Showgirls?
Yeah. And, well, there's Quick and the Dead, which is well known. Gene Hackman, Sharon Stone, Leonardo DiCaprio, Russell Crowe.
All youths. Yeah. I guess.
Kingpin, Woody Harrelson, Bill Murray.
Kingpin.
Randy Quaid. And you got a little cameo role in that.
I still get paid residuals for that. $15 a year. Is that a speaking line?
Yeah. What did you do in the film again at the end? What had happened there?
Well, we were a grip, and the director and the producer, or the, I think a brother or friend team, whatever they were, they would pull cast members out and give them little bit parts.
Mm-hmm.
Like the script supervisor had a spot, boom operator had a part, and another one of the grips had a part, but they had just released all the background to go to another set, and they still had a scene to do, and they asked if anybody wanted to be in the movie, and I raised my hand. So then I off the wardrobe I was, and makeup, and came out, and they gave me a line to say, which is critical, because if the director gives you a line, then you get paid money. If you make up a line, you don't get paid anything. The director has to give you a line to say.
Ah, and what was your line?
Tough luck, Mr. Munson.
Well, and what happened at that end of that scene? Was it Woody? This was the bowling scene,
the big bowling tournament.
Yeah.
To Bill Murray's character, and he's sitting down rejected, and I come by in my janitor's costume and sweep, pick up his hand because he was an amputee, and give it back to him.
He say thank you?
No, he just stayed in character, and it was just this one crane shot. Pulls back, and then cut.
Back to credits. So, and then, you know, from there, and that was in the 90s, of course, and we're looking at... this is going to be basically a two-part series. There's a lot to cover here, but we want to do talk about some of the things in the production end as well. But, yeah, beyond that, you know, we'll get into Blaze of Glory with Will Ferrell, Green Hornet, Star Trek, American Sniper, which is coming up in the next series. We'll talk about that.
Right.
But right now, you know, as we are looking at this transition that you've gone through, you know, you've been there when... it was major motion pictures being done.
Film.
And then going into cable. Film,
yeah.
And now, you know, the HBOs of the world were starting to produce their own. And now you're seeing this whole transition into streaming. And now non-existent sets.
Right.
That do exist, but they don't exist because it's all virtual.
Virtual reality. That was the craziest thing to walk in on at CES. You have... people designing sets by drawing, which is a good entry-level job, but there's no real sets there. It's everything's in the background, and it tracks with the cameras. The camera pans, the whole set will pan. I mean, they got down to the detail where they see dust flying across the background. If it was a desert scene or if it's a windy scene, you'll see the flags and the banners waving just to keep the illusion going that you're in a reality that's not really there. That's not really reality. It's just like
there's no reality.
There's no reality. It's
and movies is always the movies have already motion picture production has always been about creating a reality out of nothing, an illusion, and you know, set building and construction and all those things. You know, when you really look behind the scenes, as you were telling me before, in a way, it's like building a house, isn't it?
You have your director or as your general contractor. Who has a vision, and then he'll hire his framers, he'll hire his plumbers, he'll hire his electricians to decorate the flooring, the finished people, carpenters. So that's kind of how a film works, where you have one person has their vision, and then they know somebody who's like the director of photography or wardrobe, head of wardrobe, or the art department. And then they have their people that they pull from, their talents, to make sure that everyone's vision, that's the greatest thing about filmmaking, is you're working together as a team to get someone's vision. There's no real competition. Everybody sees this goal, and they read the script, and they see the storyboards, and we just want to collaborate and get to that finished product. It's pretty an amazing to sit back and watch the whole process take place, if you will?
There's a lot being done. I mean, a majority of these scenes, too, may only be a few seconds here, another few seconds there, and all the setup that goes into that before the actor or even the actual director himself shows up on camera. Right. It's all being worked on, all being constructed, all being done and tested.
We were on Straight Outta Compton, and we rehearsed this scene where the camera comes through a room and sees these people acting, and then the camera gets passed through a window. And now there's a DJ out there playing the music at this party scene, and we take it, and then we hang it up to a pole, and someone has the camera on the line, and then they drop it down pool level, and another person picks it up, walks it into the pool as a character walks into the pool, and we hook it up to a pipe, and it comes across the pool, and then another person will take it out and go up to where the actor is playing dominoes and to finish the scene. And we rehearsed, I don't know, 20, 30 times. And the director said, I'm going to leave this in. I'm not going to cut it. Because usually you do big camera shots like that, wide scopes. They'll cut it up. They'll pop. Today's audience doesn't have the attention span. It's another story. But this one he promised to leave in. And he pretty much did. It was nice to see.
Yeah. No, there's some old school things that they've done, as you've seen. I mean, I'm going back to Blades of Glory with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And how the scene where he was spinning around on the ice, and how did they do that again? That was
during pre-production. We had like 3 months of pre-production. The key grip, Steve Foss, and I came up with a concept where pucks go over the ice pretty easily, more so than ice figure skates. You're in a linear moving pattern where you can go this way or this way, but we felt with pucks you could go in any sweeping motion. So we started with three pucks. They were bigger, actually, but plastic. And then built a tripod with aluminum piping. It comes up. And then you can mount your camera to the Fisher plate, which also has a remote head.
Mm-hmm.
So the operator is off the ice. He's somewhere else. We have the man skating with this apparatus. And he can follow the actors anywhere he wanted to go, anywhere they went on the ice. But then we could adjust it to get the low ice skating shots. And then it was just that kind of process. As long as you have the time, you can usually figure out and get the director's vision that they want.
Yeah.
That and face replacement.
Now with digital, yes.
It's a lot AI. Different now than it was when we first started doing it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But what do you see as far as the changes that you're seeing now? And we'll talk a little bit about that in the next episode. But
process of filmmaking is the same. And what do you want people coming up and learn in this industry, and people in high school or think they can just go out and shoot stuff on their iPhones and become cinematographers and directors? There is a process, even in podcasts. You have to have a script. Basically, is the start. You want structure. You want to have the vision so you can lay out your storyboards. And then you have a collaboration of people understanding where your vision is. So the process is the same, that going through that aspect. The script, breaking down scenes, breaking down night scenes versus day scenes, you know, and having that look. But that application, I don't think, will ever change. And that so needs to be done. You just can't take a camera out and start filming something and make a movie. You know, you need something in the background, some script to follow.
Yeah. Well, that goes beyond the fact that if you are a writer and you have the concept or you're bringing it from a book, you still have to have someone that believes in that story.
Yeah.
That's where the money comes
from. That's
where
the money.
Right.
Show me the money. Yep.
Show me the money.
Yep.
Yeah. But as you say, as a team, you know, like you're part of the group that's doing all the setup in the construction area, and you know, rail dollies and
right,
lighting and so forth. But you know, it's not just like our lights here. I mean, though, this is we're professionally lit.
True,
and not a bad set.
No,
fact if you multiply this by 1,000, you know, and you want to light the entire city block of a New York street.
Right.
The director says, Andrew, I need to have this entire city block lit and make it look like Tony Afternoon. The
director of photography's vision.
Uh-huh.
And he will tell us what he wants and needs. There was one time when the director of photography said, I need a couple condors to light this. And the production said, no. Okay. Well, I need four now. And he goes, no, you can't have four. All right, great. I need six. He kept on escalating the cost so they could finally agree to come down to his budget.
Yes.
But he really wanted. But yeah, it's pretty. Here's another interesting story. It just happened on this last production we were on. The Key Grip wants to be a director of photography, which is great. So we light everything, right? We spend 30, 40 minutes, maybe an hour at most, lighting the set for the actors. They come in and they do their stuff and then cut and they send it off to the editor. Now it comes down to timing, which is you take your video footage and you can dial in your blacks, your shadows, your brights, you know, bring the people's faces up and bring other aspects down. And so what you actually light on a set is could be something totally different than what you'll see on your television, which is
interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. You go, why do you waste your time sometimes? Finite, you know, getting little highlights to these plants when they'll just go in there and do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, it goes beyond that, right? It goes to the next level and the next.
Exactly. Different layers. Like,
yeah. And then the editing level, the special effects level.
Right.
Animation. And it gets upward and onward. Yeah.
Lately, it's cheaper for them to take a footage, have a boom mic in the background shadow or any other type of shadow, remove it in post, than it is to take the time, set flags, and try to get it out.
Well, that's when you, you know, even though it's old school, I call it that, with Quick and the Dead, you have the tower scene where towards the end you have guards on that tower and they were wired. How did that work?
Very well. Everybody survived. There was no memorial to anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have cranes and you have wires attached to the stuntman. So right before the explosion goes off, they're pulled away to safety. That's all rehearsed. And then the next person was able to hit the button and blow up the clock.
Well, you blew up another clock, too. Didn't you have more than one tower?
Yeah, I think we did like puffs of smoke. Or did we pull them? Either a process, I forget, that you pull them and then do like a puff of smoke. And then you go back and then you actually do the clock explosion. There's a couple of, just for safety reasons, that they're not in harm's way if shrapnel or wooden products go either.
Well, it's funny, too, because you see it and you're on scene seeing it, and the sound is not exactly what you're hearing in the theater once you add sound effects and the explosions and everything that just rattles your cage when you're sitting in the theater. But that's what it's all about. It's creating this magic. It's creating this unbelievable, engaging process that why we want to go watch movies.
Yeah. You
know? And I think... you know, we want to continue this. We want to continue this story.
Okay.
This is in our next episode. But you know, there's things coming up as we move forward when we want to talk about American Sniper. You're off to, you know, Morocco and Hail Caesar with people produced by the Coen brothers. And geez, on and on. Forever Purge. What a great scene you did in that, following the cameraman around.
Okay, that's it. Yeah. For a cheesy movie, it actually turned out...
Black Panther 2, Prince of Bel-Air, which you were working on up till right now.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you, Andrew. Sure. You know, we want to come back with a second episode here shortly on the next round and talk more about some of these other films and some of the background things that are going on in Hollywood. In the meantime, please subscribe to BBS Film Productions' Final Cuts and just click below and learn a little bit more about what's going on in our world.
Let's face it, everybody loves to make podcasts and vodcasts, but nobody wants to edit them. Well, except for us. At Premier Podcast Productions, we professionally edit and distribute podcasts and vodcasts for companies around the world. Our process is simple and affordable, allowing you to stay focused on what you do best, developing great content, and building your subscriber base. From recording and editing to final distribution and marketing, we can help every step of the way to make your podcast stand out and get the results it deserves. Contact us today at premierpodcastpros.com to take your podcast to the next level.